Here we go.
Who the hell are you, man?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
We are the Knight!
Nerd!
Hold on to your butts.
And now for something completely different.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Knights of Nerditude, a podcast for all things nerd. I am your host tonight, Sean. I'm here with
Sam,
and on the Knights Hotline, I guess.
Hey, you got that out?
Yeah, I got that one out. On the Knights Hotline, we've got
Sean.
Double tap, Chris.
Oh God. Okay, so
that sounds like a porn name.
I know it really does. Like, yeah.
Shall I quote Sean and saying, don't touch it again or else it will go limp?
Well, it's true,
right,
though.
Before we click record.
It was very true, though. Sam's stand keeps going limp. So, if he keeps touching it, it's going to go limp.
Yeah, but like when I don't touch it, it also goes limp. So, all right.
Anyways, back to the task at hand. We've got a movie review for you guys. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Sam and John are going to be reviewing that one. We've got two trailers, Zombieland Double Tap and The Irishman. Both trailers dropped over the past week. And this past weekend, a TV show dropped on Amazon Prime called The Boys. And all of us will be reviewing that. So let's start off with the trailers. First of all, like I said, Zombieland Double Tap dropped, which I guess it's been like, not rumors, but they're like, yeah, it's going to happen. Don't worry. Like, it's been like this for like the past 10 years. Like, oh no, I know the first one was so good. I mean, we'll get around to it. Don't worry. And it's just, Woody Harrelson and I believe the director are on hiatus for Venom 2 going on. Cause that was a bombshell that he directed Venom, but, yeah, so, I mean, any initial thoughts, guys?
It's more Zombieland? This movie did not move the needle in any direction for me.
All right.
I was going to see this regardless. This was a long time coming. I was waiting for this.
It's been 10 years, something like that.
The what?
It's been almost 10 years, I think, since the first Zombieland came
2010,
out.
2010, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
So
I just watching the trailer and stuff, love it. It doesn't look like they missed a beat so far. Introduction of Rosario Dawson, I'm 100% behind. And I forget, they introduced another guy. I forgot his name.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot his name. He's in the... Oh, Jesus.
Well, there's Berkeley.
He's with
Luke Wilson's character.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I'm 100% on board with this movie. It took way too long, but I understand why everybody either didn't want to make it for a certain period of time, and hopefully they were just waiting for the script to be as funny as it really was.
I did like how the intro, which was so true, how it was like Academy Award nominee. Like, all these people, and obviously, like, winner for Emma Stone. And it's like, oh, yeah, they all have done really good movies in the past. Forgot about
that.
And
it is kind of a play. It's a weird... And it's just kind of a funny way to introduce all the actors coming back. It's like Academy nominee. And it's exactly like the next trailer we're going to talk about, too. But it's just wicked funny how they did all that.
Yeah.
Well, like, most of them got their nominations or wins in the past 10 years. So
right.
Since the last one, so.
I mean, all of them for Now You See Me, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that was a phenomenal movie right there.
I don't see how this movie is going to have a smaller opening than the first one.
No, because the first one was kind of like a hidden gem. Like, not many people knew. I mean, I didn't watch it until like 2 years after it came out because I really didn't hear much about it other than, oh, no, it's pretty funny. And then it was like, eventually I watched it and I was like, oh, wow, that was actually a pretty good movie.
That's how I'm going to watch this movie. 2 years down the line, I'll be like, yeah, I could use a laugh and turn it on and watch it, have a laugh, and then forget about it like I did the original Zombieland. I don't know. Wasn't it
100% paying money to see this. I'm 100% paying this to see this.
It wasn't really a watershed moment for me, where it's just like, oh yeah, it was funny. Moving on.
John, any thoughts for this movie?
People were asking for the sequel?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's news to me. You learn something every day.
Oh, oh yeah. Everybody was asking for a sequel
on this one. This was a highly sought after sequel.
A lot more than Super Troopers 2.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm wondering, what studio picked this up? Do you know?
No clue. I think it's Sony.
Is it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it's still Sony. Both were Sony.
Okay.
So, I just think it was because, who's the director? Ruben Fleischer. Was just like super busy doing things like Venom.
Really? That's what you think was the 9-year delay?
Yeah. No. Well, I'm looking at like his other things. Like since then, he's done 30 minutes or less, which was that comedy, if you want to call it that, with Jesse Eisenberg. You had Gangster Squad. You had Venom. Those are like the big things he's known for.
Ooh, like a lot of swing and misses there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Mule? Oh, he was an EP on The Mule, though.
No, yeah. Look at just director. Like, not a whole lot for directing. Like, because, like, literally 30 minutes or less, Gangster Squad. I directed a couple episodes of American Housewife and Superstore. A couple episodes of The Santa Clara Diet. Then Venom. And now this. I mean, directing-wise, he hasn't really done much. So
that's all right.
All right.
Well, moving on.
Well, moving on from that to a movie with whose title is very misleading, The Irishman, starring a bunch of Italian guys.
All Academy Award winners.
Yes, though. Academy. Which, to be fair, a lot of those Academy Award winning movies were about 30 plus years ago.
And they were all about mob movies.
Yeah. Because, like...
Wait, De Niro didn't win for Dirty Grandpa?
I was going to say, you got Dirty Grandpa for... which was, like, his most recent one. But then his Al Pacino in Jack and Jill, obviously.
Wait, Dirty Grandpa is Robert De Niro's most recent movie?
No, but, like, that was a bad movie that he's been in recently.
That actually wouldn't surprise me.
I could have swore The Intern... was the
that's right. You made that. Yeah.
No, not.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the most recent one that he did.
It's not anyway, like that's continue. Much better, but.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I think this movie's Oscar bait to the fullest extent.
I think it seems like Oscar bait, but I think it's going to fall flat on its face. Part of me.
Are you talking in the box office?
No. Like it's set up to be this like amazing movie, but I feel like it probably won't be.
Well, we'll never know because it's not going to be in theaters.
By the way,
it will be in theaters.
We'll
never know how much it makes in theaters though.
Chris, Dirty Grandpa is the most recent Robert De Niro credit.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, Intern was 2015. 2015, Dirty Grandpa, 2016.
We should just do a podcast where like all we do is just read people's IMDb pages.
Well,
you just described our podcast, though.
So. Yeah. No, but so
also
The Irishman.
Every episode.
The Irishman, I mean, it's got Robert De Niro. It's got Joe Pesci. It's got Scorsese directing. You know, it's got like, it's got a lot of powerhouses 30 years ago. Is what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of like, yeah, they're, you know, back to form. It's like, kind of like the Expendables was for action movies. Like, this is for, like, mob movies. Where it's like, remember how they were so good in the 80s? Well, we're bringing the team back. And it's like, okay. Like, I don't know. Like, I just... The thing that capped it off for me, though, and I brought it up to Sam, was at the very end, there's a horridly... de-aged De Niro, like, reveal at the end. And it looks really bad.
He looks just CG'd.
Yeah.
Like he should be hanging out with Shrek.
It's not the best, but that's not going to deter me from
No, but that this. That like right there starts to kind of like, ooh, like I hope they don't focus on this for like half the movie.
Like, well, they're de-aged in a lot of the movie.
Yeah,
I'm just missing that.
Yeah, so
and I think the most they do, we didn't even see. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
He doesn't even look that de-aged, like age-wise.
Mm.
Like, whether or not you think it was, like, effective CGI or not. Like, no, it doesn't look like he's, like, you know, 40. Like, it looks like he's, like, 55 when he's, like, 75. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, at some point it just becomes, like, a moot thing. But does that deter you guys at all?
If it looks so bad, yes.
I mean, if it's...
a little bit, because it, like, it shows me, like, okay, how much are you guys caring?
Yeah, but say it's one of the best written movies... I'm not saying this is true, but say it was one of the best written movies of all time.
But it looked horrible.
But it didn't look horrible because it didn't look bad. I mean,
it looks bad,
but it didn't look bad.
His de-aging looks like Princess Leia in Rogue One.
Well, it doesn't help.
See, I thought that was totally fine, but
well, yeah, I thought it was fine too.
Well, it's
Tarkin was weird.
I would say Tarkin. Okay, fine. Agent Coulson.
In Marvel?
Yeah, the most recent, yeah. In Captain Marvel. Like, that, yeah. it looked that kind of bad, whereas, like, that doesn't look right.
Well, this wouldn't be that big of a problem if, while also watching this trailer, I would be like, I'm watching this and going, there's nothing that stands out in this trailer. It's just like, yeah, we've made this movie before, and we just decided to make it again.
Mm.
Like, What makes this seem unique or interesting?
This movie? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think it's going to be received very well. Like I said, these guys, all of these guys, actors wise, hit their prime like 30 years ago. Like that was their best. And since then, like we said, they've done like Dirty Grandpa and Jack and Jill, like, that they don't have a good track record over the past, we'll say, 10 years.
I'm going to be honest. I was, like, 30% sure Joe Pesci was dead. But...
Well,
yeah,
no,
he just, like, retired.
Yeah, he really hasn't done much.
I don't know. I felt that way.
He was in those Home Alone Alexa commercials. Or Google commercials.
True, yeah.
Which was funny because I like those commercials because, like, when you just see the Macaulay Culkin one, and you hear his line, it's like, oh, they took it from the movie, that poor Joe Pesci. But then they have that other one where Joe Pesci is like with all his friends and family watching the commercial. And he's like, here's my big line. Here's my big line. And then he says the line. They're like, oh, he's like, yeah, that was me. Like that just warmed my heart. It was a nice commercial. It's sad that I think it's for Alexa.
So. Let me ask you guys this question.
What?
This movie is being simultaneously released in theaters and on Netflix.
Okay.
Or at the very least, I think it's pretty close. You know, Netflix, notoriously, they never... Everything that they release is on the platform. Like, Amazon makes stuff, puts it in movies, and then we'll have it on Amazon Prime, you know, after 6 months or whatever.
Right.
So here's my conundrum, right? I would, in any case, go see this movie in theaters, like if it was just a normal movie. If for anything else, just to, you know, send the market a message, so to speak, of like, yeah, this is the kind of movies that I want to see mm-hmm. in theaters, not like only superhero movies and like loud noises mm-hmm. or like Disney remakes that are shit. But... Like, what does it matter with Netflix? Because one, they're not even going to release they're not going to release the box office because they just don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And two, like, I don't think Netflix cares about the movie theater thing. So, like, why should I? I mean, just like the experience of seeing it in theaters for like $20 versus effectively free because I just get Netflix anyway. Like, what?
I think they have to release box office numbers if it's actually in a theater.
Well, yeah, they'll release.
No, but it's like the Nielsen ratings. They only track it if you want them to.
Really?
No, I thought you had to release numbers. Each theater that has a movie has to release the numbers.
No, I think it's like a popularity thing. Because look, they don't. If you like Box Office Mojo, which is another hobby of ours, if you Box Office Mojo like Roma, you won't see anything.
Really?
I don't.
I'm looking right now at Roma.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, because I really feel like they have to release it if it's actually in a theater.
Well, if you're there, did they?
No, they didn't. You're right.
It's all NAs, yeah. So, you know, who the hell knows? And, like, I don't even know if it really matters. I guess, long story short, I was thinking to myself originally, like, yeah, I should go see this in theaters. Like, that kind of feel right. But at the end of the day, it's like, no, there's really no reason.
Yeah.
So. I think this is a choice whether or not you want to, like you said, say whether or not this is a movie you want to see in theaters.
Yeah, and I can't think of a benefit to go see this in theaters.
Right.
I mean, if this was like a Christopher Nolan movie, yeah, or something like that. Well, like, I'd probably go see that in theaters.
Christopher Nolan has great spectacles. Like, yeah, it's fun to watch,
whereas, especially like, on a big screen with like nice sound. Like, yeah. But, like, this movie, this is, like, an intimate movie that you can watch on, like, your computer or your TV and get the same experience.
But then you get people like me who, if I had the time to, I would go see this in theaters, even though it's on Netflix, just because I love going.
Hmm.
The movie theater is probably one of my favorite places to go in the world, so...
Yeah, I mean,
You know, you get people like me, which is probably a wicked small portion of the population, but
or you get people like me who sees this and I'm like, nah, but if it gets okay reviews and like people talk about it, I'll be like, you know what? It's on Netflix.
I'll rip it on the Fire Stick.
Well, no, but like with it being on Netflix, I'd be like, yeah, I'll watch it there. Whereas if like it was getting decent reviews. And it, like you guys were like, oh, this is a great movie. You got to see it. And it's in the movie theaters. I'd just probably be like, I'll wait till it's on demand. I'd rather like not go to spend $20 to go see this movie where it's like, you know, I'm not 100% in on this movie because like it doesn't intrigue me.
There needs to be a better, I guess, test in the market for if you want to phrase it that way. But. What I'm saying is if they had, you know, a big blockbuster Christopher Nolan thing where they spent $150, $200 million on a Netflix movie where it's about, it's an action movie by either Christopher Nolan or you get, I hate to say his name, but Michael Bay. Or even if you get like a...
He's doing one for Netflix.
Is he? Yeah, I wouldn't Michael doubt Bay. It. It's just, you know what I mean? Like a big blockbuster. Would be the true test of whether or not people want to see things in theaters or on Netflix.
I mean, I'm very interested because, I mean, Annihilation was a Netflix tech kind of movie where, yeah, it was released in theaters, but like, what, like 3 months later, it was on Netflix, like pretty quickly. Yeah,
but it was still in theaters though. So that's kind of your gauge.
Yeah, but like,
so I'm curious whether
they would never release a big budget, huge movie in both at the same time. They would pick or choose. I don't think they would do them both at the same time because, like, if let's say, you know, because his name's out there, Michael Bay does a Transformers movie, let's say, and, you know, they did, like, Netflix decides to back it. There's no chance, based on track history, you would just throw that on Netflix. You'd put that in theaters because you're going to make track history says you're going to make a boatload of money if you do that. Minus the most recent, not Bumblebee, but the most recent one.
Yeah, but then you don't have to pay distribution. So it's.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird. I would love to know all the numbers behind all that stuff.
Netflix will not tell you.
No. Just any movie, how much distributors get paid because. I don't know. I'm curious about all that.
I'm pretty sure, like, movie theaters don't get much.
The theaters themselves, no.
Yeah.
because they say studios.
But like, because they say that the big thing with movie theaters is the reason why concessions are so high is that's where they actually make their money.
Yeah, they only get like half your ticket.
Yeah.
I'd even go lower than that. I think they maybe get 25% of the ticket price.
Which is sad.
Maybe 20.
It's kind of sad, but...
But then again, what the hell did they do?
Yeah, right. I mean...
Yeah, what did they do?
Let's face it. How many...
a giant theater.
Yeah, but let's face it like this, though. It's $10 for a ticket now, so... Yeah.
It's 10 to 12.
I never eat anything at a theater.
Some places...
But Sean,
I've
always get
12.
Something.
It depends on how long the movie is. I'm not going to sit through a 3-hour movie without anything to eat or drink.
Fine. For Endgame, what did you get for Endgame?
I believe I got the collector's popcorn and drink because I've done that for every Avengers movie. So I just
continued. Yeah, so it's probably that alone is what, $22 maybe.
It's like $20, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that's 22 per person, and then you do half the theater, and there's what, 50 seats in the theater. It's
more than 50.
All right, so you're making what, $1,000 per theater, $2,000 per theater per showing. It's just they're still making their money. I'm not worried about a theater making money because they still do.
But the problem is a lot of them don't. There has been a huge problem with a lot of theaters closing, especially small ones. Closing down around our nation because they can't afford to be open.
Well, it's location, population.
Yeah, but these aren't like popped up 5 years later. They went belly up. I mean, these are theaters that have been around for 100 years, but like 50 plus.
They also need to maintain the theaters too, you know.
Well, you need money to maintain a theater.
Well, it's investing in your building too,
right? But if there's no money to invest, that's the problem.
Well, this truly is an American tragedy, but let's move on.
All right, yeah, so Irishman, you three are in.
I could really go into some of the movies.
I'm
down
lukewarm.
Here.
Sam's lukewarm. John,
but it's on Netflix, so yeah, I'll watch it.
John, you're in. Chris, you're in. I'm out. I'm not gonna watch this movie. No interest at all. All right, well, speaking of no interest at all, Sam and John watched a movie. this over the past week, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Did we ever?
Yes.
So, John, why don't you take this?
All right. Well, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is, as marketed, the 9th film by Quentin Tarantino, even though it's like technically 10 and he's done other stuff too. But, it is essentially set in 1969. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt as Leonardo DiCaprio is a like aging TV star who had a show, who was the lead on a cowboy show, I think either in the 50s or early 60s, but his career's kind of faded since then, and now he's just trying to find guest roles on TV shows, or you know, maybe he's gonna go to Japan to go shoot some spaghetti westerns or something like
that. Well, Italy, not Japan.
Oh, yeah, not
Japan. His career's not that bad.
Yeah, it's not getting that weird. And Brad Pitt plays Clint Booth, his stunt double buddy, who's been the stunt double for him but in the past, but now is pretty much just his driver, gopher, / professional friend. And, it's pretty much, break up this movie into, like, the first two-thirds, which is, like, the first, like, two-ish hours, and then the last third. The first two-thirds, it's a lot of kind of split stories with Brad Pitt and Leo kind of doing their own thing. Margot Robbie is also in it. She's technically a star, though she doesn't have a lot going on. As Sharon Tate, who, spoiler alert for people who like histories, we will, by the way, do, I guess, a little bit without spoilers first, and then we'll talk about spoilers, because it's really a tough movie not to discuss spoilers.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie stars as Sharon Tate, who is murdered by the Manson family in 1969, so just kind of all intersects with all that, the plot of the movie does. And, yeah, they kind of wander around Hollywood and, you know, chill out for a little bit. Go see some movies, listen to some music, smoke some cigarettes, drink 8 whiskey sours. you know, it's a good time. Let's go to Sam first, because I'm petrified if Sam... what Sam's got to say here. What did you think of the movie, man?
All right, so trying to be as spoiler-free as I can, and as my thing starts getting limp again. but, so, my big take from this is an hour and a half of this is a great movie. The other hour and a half is just superfluous bullshit. Like, I kept...
Is it the first half or the last half? Or just half of the movie in general?
Kind of half of the movie in general. I kind of enjoyed the whole, like, the stuff with DiCaprio's character where he was, like, struggling on set and, like, struggling with the lines and kind of freaking out with himself. Like, I kind of liked that whole subplot, even though it had really nothing to do with the whole main plot. But
right.
But like, I just remember sitting in the theater just thinking to myself, like, God, if Tarantino can just stop for 1 second and stop jerking off the 1960s, maybe this could be a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, he does. He's very much an extra kind of guy. You know?
Yeah, there's just so much, like, the whole... One of the weirdest things for me was the whole subplot about Brad Pitt killing his wife that comes up and then just never comes up again.
Never really comes back into question.
Feels like a weird thing just to have throw away, where it's like, it seems kind of serious.
Yeah. I guess to me, overall, I just totally loved this whole movie. I'll take it, even though I totally understand what you mean, that, like, at least, like, an hour of this movie is just a jerk-off.
Yeah.
Not literally. You should mention
yes,
that.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, you never know. But, now, this, like, listen, a movie like this is, like, pushing pretty much every single button I have. Like, I could just watch Brad Pitt drive around in, like, 1969, like, in a convertible, like...
And oh, like, will you?
Yeah.
You watch a lot of people drive around.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people driving in, very fast in very narrow corners and shit.
Yeah.
Even though there's never, like, an actual chase or anything. You know, the movie is really just a bunch of vignettes, by and large. Like, it's a bunch of little things, you know, like... The thing about, you know, Brad Pitt's character maybe killing his wife is, like, actually, it's a flashback within a flashback to begin with.
Yeah,
you know,
that was a little weird.
And it's within a flashback that involves him, like, fighting Bruce Lee, which, you know, is in the trailer, so it's not really giving up much. But, yeah, man, I dug it. And it's not like every Tarantino movie is like a compulsion, like, this is a 9 out of 9, you know, like, except, you know, Inglourious Basterds got a lot of 9 in it. see what I did on that one.
Got it.
German humor.
Yeah.
That's but, rare.
but... Yeah, no, I totally love this one. Listen, I saw this movie twice in 24 hours. So
wow. Well, I mean, I'm not saying I hate this. I actually enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed my time with this movie. It's just there were, like, parts of it where I'm just like, why are we here? What's going on? I don't really get this, but okay. Although I have to compliment Tarantino on the fact that he was really holding in the violence. You know, his movies are typically very violent, and this one, like, most of the movie, almost nothing that seems violent.
Right.
Except till the end.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll break into spoilers here. Yeah. Any last parting non-spoilery thoughts? Listen, I think you don't have to like older movies or whatever to like this, but if you do, like, I feel like you'll love it. You'll catch like a lot of the references and stuff. But yeah. That's not like it's enjoyable on a very basic level, even past that for most of it. And then the ending is like just kind of incredible.
Yeah. But moving on to spoilers.
All right, so now that we're going to spoil the shit out of this movie. So, obviously the big twist at the end, in the last act of this movie, which really could very much just be the movie itself. Like, I don't disagree, Sam, that, like, it's not like the mean potatoes, and, like, I'd be upset if you took the rest away from me, but, like, you know, having an alternate history where the Manson family, like, pretty much at, like, a drop of a dime, like, decides to go after Leo's character instead, just because he yelled at them with, like, in a robe with a, like, pitcher full of frozen margaritas. So, you know, I thought the ending was awesome. Like, I mean,
oh yeah. Yeah, I had, like, mixed feelings. I remember sitting in the theater feeling, like, mixed feelings about the movie as it was going on. I'm like, I'm not really enjoying this. And then the last 20 minutes happened, and I went, God damn it, I love that. that made the movie for me.
Well, what I think he does that's kind of incredible is the whole fake-out with Sharon Tate, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
She's just built up the entire time to just be, like, such a lovely person that, like, you know what's happening. Like, it's impossible not to, like, see this movie and not know what's happening.
Yeah.
But, like, to just the entire time have this sort of existential dread that you kind of forget about because there's so much else going on, but at the end of the day, you're like, well, what the fuck is going to happen here? And then you see she's, like, pregnant, and then, you know, he does this thing in that sort of third act, too, where he time stamps everything as if it's a docudrama.
Yeah.
You know, so it feels like it's supposed to be realistic. When in reality, it just all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little annoyed at the end where I'm like, so all the Sharon Tate stuff was pointless. Okay. But,
in some ways, I mean, you know, I think it's, you know, I think she's supposed to show you, like, you know, stardom on the ascendancy. You know, Leo's kind of washed out and Brad Pitt's kind of never made it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, like,
I think there's a sort of, like, assumption with Brad Pitt that I don't want to say he was ever trying to be an actor, but even as a stuntman is probably, like, you know.
Yeah, he's even washed up for a stuntman.
Right, yeah, and that too, right. You can't even get a job where the job is just, like, you know, as Leo says, like, you know, throw him off a roof, hit him with a Lincoln, we'll do whatever.
Yeah. But I have to admit, like, probably my favorite part of this movie had anything to do with the Manson family.
Didn't have anything to do with it?
No, that had all the stuff that had to deal with the Manson family, I really liked. Like, that whole scene where Brad Pitt shows up at the family ranch. And, like, just that was a really, really good, really tense scene. And you, like, it was just really well done. I'm struggling to describe it, but.
Yeah, no, it's for a movie that's so kind of, like, happy and the stakes are, like, you know, it's Leonardo DiCaprio's Rick Dalton's identity. But at the end of the day, he's a fucking actor. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Worst comes to worst, he has to move out of the hills.
Yeah.
Whereas you're then sort of transported in this world of you're like, oh, fuck, is Brad Pitt going to die?
Yeah. But speaking of the last 20 minutes, though, but I just, the whole scene leading up to the Manson fight where Brad Pitt is high on acid, I just loved all that.
Yeah, it was solid with, I mean, honestly, my favorite part of it was just, like, right when the showdown's, like, about to happen, and, oh god, what's the song? Keep Me Hanging On starts playing, and it has that like awesome intro with like the organs and everything. And I'm like, oh god, this is really gonna be great. And then we get a flamethrower too, so. Which is Chekhov's flamethrower, which was probably like, if I had like a single like just awesome moment of the movie, it would be that.
Yeah, yeah. Which, speaking of like it as just Chekhov's flamethrower, I didn't see that coming. Like,
no,
I thought the flamethrower stuff was just part of the superfluous bullshit that it was happening earlier in the movie. And then it just comes back. I'm like, oh, all right. If one thing has to make a comeback, I'm glad it's the flamethrower.
It's funny because, so on the second viewing, obviously I was hip to that. And when Brad Pitt goes in his like shed or whatever, when he's going to fix the antenna on his roof, you see the flamethrower there, but it's so like nonchalantly there, but it's like hilarious. Like now that you know that it's there, like it's just staring you at the face, you know? My favorite part, and this kind of sounds stupid, but I loved like him being in The Great Escape.
Yeah, that was kind of
like, it was just kind of like dumb and no reason to, like, it didn't actually need to be in there.
Yeah, it confused me a bit because it was like, okay, are they trying to establish that he's lying about the fact that he never had a shot, or is this like a dream sequence?
I think it was just sort of, like a dream or whatever that could have been him.
You know? I was a bit confused on like the meaning of that. But at the same time, I just kind of like that where he's just in The Great Escape.
And it's funny because it's like, you know, Forrest Gump did the same thing like 20 years ago. And that's kind of aged questionably. But like, I don't know. I just it's like. To use your powers just to put him in The Great Escape for whatever reason was I found it funny. But it was cool though, because then, you know, when Sharon Tate's going to the movies to watch herself, that's actually Sharon Tate. Like they don't put Mark Robbie in the movie. So it kind of becomes or at least that part of it kind of becomes an interesting choice in and of itself.
Like I was expecting her to be inserted in, but she wasn't. Right.
Yeah, especially after you see it, you know, from, you know, see him in The Great Escape, right? So, I was just kind of amazed too at just the endless supply of like A, B, whatever you want to call them, like actors just showed up in this movie. Like Al Pacino's in this for like 5 minutes. Like Scoot McNairy shows up just to like get shot. Like Clifton Collins is in it and I don't even think he says anything. But, like, you know, he's in, like, fucking, like, Westworld as, like, a co-star. Like, you know, it's just, it's all kind of incredible. And it's just a very, very unique experience that you don't really get too often. And I'm glad I could be a part of it. An incredible soundtrack, too.
I mean, I'm just, why did this have to be 3 hours? That's just my biggest stickler with this movie. Well, it was 2 hours and 45 minutes.
2:45, which is close enough.
It's close enough.
Listen, so I saw it, the first time I saw it on the Thursday preview, or whatever they want to call them now. And then the next day, I had a half day at work, so I took my dad to go see it that afternoon. And, like, there was definitely parts, like, 30 minutes in where I'm like, oh, God, there's a lot of movie left. There's a lot of stuff we got to cover between now and the end of this thing. It's long, man. I'm sure there's even possibly going to be a Netflix cut like he did with The Hateful Eight. That might be like 4 hours long.
Which
at least this one like would justify the 4 hours, because at least like you're in different locations and shit, and it's not just like one room for 4 hours.
And it also makes sense to cut this into a TV show since it deals with TV shows. So there's more of a logical connection there. But
yeah, so I guess like Tarantino said, like he's just like written like 6 or 7 episodes of Bounty Law, which is the show that Leo was on originally. Yeah. And he just like he wants to make them. Like he knows like, you know, he won't be able to get Leo, but like he still wants to make them or whatever, even though... Because he just wrote him to, you know, get into the character or whatever.
Yeah.
So one little note I do have on it is that I guess so. You know, he's in an episode of FBI, and I guess Burt Reynolds is the guy that is actually playing that part in the real show.
Yeah, I was wondering that because that I was watching that. I'm like, this looks like an actual episode of FBI, although I've never watched the show. But
right.
But I was like, it looks like it's 1960s TV. So did they just insert him in there?
I don't know. I don't think they did the same thing where like he's just on top of Steve McQueen's head or whatever they did for the other one. Like, I think they just like intercut the shots or whatever.
Yeah.
Like they filmed regular and then made it look like the 60s. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I thought it was interesting because Burt Reynolds is in there. And he did the same kind of thing at the end where he went and, like, made a spaghetti western or two and, like, you know, had a little bit of a career. I think it was on Gunsmoke or something. And then, you know, he has kind of this resurgence in the 70s. And it's funny because, like, his best friend is Hal Needham, who directed Smokey and the Bandit, who's a stuntman. You know? So it's sort of – it fit nicely together. Mm. So I thought that was cool. But then there's other people. It's not like he's supposed to be Burt Reynolds. Like, he's like a – if anything, like a Burt Reynolds type, but there's a bunch of other people, you know, who had similar paths as well. Mm. So, any other thoughts?
I feel like I expressed my thoughts.
It's time for a rating.
All right,
Sam, what do you give this?
Can I give this like two ratings?
No, you have to give it one rating.
I feel like I have to give it two ratings because I have two very distinct feelings about this movie.
You add them together and divide it by two.
All right, we don't have time for math. I'll give it 8.2.
Okay, John?
Listen, I understand if people don't care for this movie. I get it.
Yeah,
but like I'm kind of like Sean with Godzilla on this one.
Okay,
I'm not going to destroy the scale and the sanctity of the rating system, but I'm going to give it a 9.4.
Okay. To be fair, like I said with Godzilla, that's not a true review. It's just I'm not able to review that movie.
So does the rating come off the board?
Nope, it's a 10. Because Chris wrote it. I didn't write it, so...
It needs, like, an asterisk on it or something. All right. You were juicing for that movie.
You know what? You know what? Bonds is still number one in home runs.
Who's writing the Metacritic for this one?
Yeah, one of you guys have to write a Metacritic review, so good luck with that. You guys can figure that out on your own time. But we have one last thing we can talk about today. That is a show that dropped over the weekend on Amazon Prime. It's called The Boys, based off of a graphic novel by the same name. Interestingly enough, it is the comic book that it's based off of is created by the guy who did Preacher. So after he did Preacher, he went on and did this comic. And the way he described it is it was going to out-preacher the Preacher. So he was going to go above and beyond the sex and violence that Preacher had. And, I mean, it does. Not to spoil anything, but, I mean, Chris, what was your, just give me an, initial thoughts of this show.
Initial thought?
Just initial thoughts.
The easiest, and I think I texted you guys this.
Yeah.
This scratches an itch that I didn't know needed to be scratched.
Mm.
And I'm 100% on board with this show after this first season. I finished it. You guys didn't finish it. I finished it.
Yeah, I'm four episodes in, John's three, Sam's one.
And I'm very much in on this. And this is not a show that I typically would really enjoy because I've dropped from Preacher. And I'm moderately interested in Watchmen. So this kind of fits into that category. Obviously, Sean, you mentioned the writer is the guy who wrote Preacher. And there are some things that it doesn't outdo Preacher, but then there's some other things that it does. So
Well, he was saying that the comic was going to out-preacher the preacher comic.
Well, I haven't read the book.
Right. But so
it's hard to show that it's hard for me to believe that the show would hold anything back.
Right.
Because in a bunch of the future episodes, which you haven't seen yet, there's some real dark stuff in there.
Oh, I believe it.
I mean, some real dark stuff in there.
So the way I look at this is once I read that it was based on a comic written by the guy who wrote Preacher, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
He has a name.
Okay,
Garth,
fine.
Garth Ennis.
Yes.
Garth Ennis. E-N-N-I-S.
Either way, Garth? His name is Garth.
Like, every time you say Garth Ennis, I think Darth Ennis.
I know.
I'm just imagining, like, a nerdier Darth Vader. With, like, glasses and stuff. And
yeah. And a neck beard. So, yeah, so, I mean...
What is The Boys about? Have we even said what The Boys is about?
No, we have not. John, do you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. The Boys on Amazon Prime is about essentially an alternate world of superheroes, not unlike things we've seen before with Marvel and DC, sort of a mishmash and a little bit of everything, where there is, I guess, a company that sort of, it's unclear what they do so much as they're just sort of a group of superheroes. Like if all the superheroes in the world joined a conglomerate, like this would be what the company does. Like they do the actual
promoting
superhero, right? Yeah, they promote them. Yeah, became, I guess that's the best thing.
Superheroes became monetized.
Yeah,
yeah, they monetize and manage superheroes essentially.
Yeah,
via movies or actual involvement in real world events, gaming's merchandising, you know, anything. Which is interesting because, you know, in real life, that's pretty much just what Marvel does, except there aren't actual superheroes, you know?
Mm. Oh, like, and I guess this isn't really a spoiler, but you guys haven't seen it yet, but they actually, like, book superheroes to cities and towns that have high crime problems.
Yeah, they talk about that in one of the episodes.
Yeah, they do.
About Baltimore.
Yes. First episode.
So they'll, like, bid on superheroes. Yeah. It's just...
It's dead.
Right. No, it's kind of different than what we've been seeing.
Yeah,
in pretty much every TV show and a movie regarding superheroes. So
I mean,
yeah, it's
the superheroes that they focus on are basically the Justice League, because there's a Superman character, there's a Wonder Woman character, there's a Flash character, there's an Aquaman character. So like.
I think that one guy's kind of supposed to be Batman.
No, there is in the comic. He's called. Oh God, he's Tech Knight, is the guy's name.
Oh really?
Yeah. So there is with, and he's got like a boy that is his like, you know, partner. So yeah, there is a Batman character in the comics that, and I believe he's mentioned once during a the news. They bring up Tech Knight for some, but so he'll probably be in future episodes if this gets picked up for a second season.
It's kind of like if the Avengers were in a world where there are a bunch of like other Avenger quality like superheroes doing shit simultaneously.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah,
probably what like the actual MCU is. Even though, like, you know, you couldn't possibly ever have a movie that would go into that kind of scale. But anyway, the whole part of this is that it's totally fucking dark and a satire, I guess. Maybe not even. I don't know. I don't know, like, how... I think what kind of throws me a little bit with this is, like, the tone. Like, I'm not sure sometimes if this is supposed to be... Like a 100% like a satire, or if it's just supposed to be like super serious and dare I say twisted. I don't know. I'm interested in the show. I'll probably finish it unless like I really lose interest. Haven't gone back to it since I started watching it over the weekend, but you know, that million reasons for that. But I like where this is going. I'm not in love with it. I've seen a lot of people who are like in love with this show, and I just haven't felt that way. But I like what I see so far.
All right. Sam.
All right. I got
saved you for last for
a reason.
I got
a feeling about this show. Granted, I've only watched one episode, but it had enough in it to just rub something on me. I don't really like this show. There's something terribly like cynical and nihilistic about it.
It doesn't get any better, Sam.
Yeah, no. That's the feeling I've gotten. But it's just like I'm not. It feels like it's like, you know, one of those like weird kids in high school who always wears the trench coat. It feels like one of his fantasies, because it's like it's about these guys, you know, taking on the system, but you don't really know what like.
The system is,
or why they're taking, like, you know, the system is corrupt, but you don't know, like, just why. Why any of this? Why? It feels like just a weird fantasy, like a power fantasy.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's a little, like, under-established at times. I think it's, like, a pretty, like, simple premise, but even then, like, stuff is kind of under-explained.
Yeah,
you'll get a better explanation through the episodes, through the mid to later ones.
Okay.
Because I was in the same thing. I'm like, I still don't know why these people are doing what they're doing. And then once I hit, once you get introduced to a mayor of Baltimore, that's when it kind of really starts to take its shape.
Yeah,
because you're still in introduction mode.
Is this, would you describe this as like an 8-hour movie?
Not really. I can't give you a definitive no on this, but I can see how you could view it as an 8-hour movie, but it's really not. They do have separations.
Okay.
They do have a lot of separations. So in each episode, they do have like not a task, but there's usually a thing that it's centered around. So one episode you'll get to it's called a believer's fair.
That's so episode five, I believe.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's like that's the one I'm about to start.
Yeah, so then they'll have that one, and then they'll have.
There's the race, which I know.
Yeah, there's the race, and then which I think you guys have all seen, and then there's a few other ones, and I'm not gonna say what they are yet, but. Yeah. So there's like, a bad guy of the week almost, but in a sense that it's just one task that you need to do for that episode.
There's also just something really rich about the show, which so far I've gotten the vibe that there's a very strong anti-corporate message in this, like corporations are evil, and this is being produced by one of the biggest corporations in the world. It feels very like, hey, I'm hip with the kids too. I'm not one of those bad corporations. Yeah. Look at me, hate on the man. And then you see the ads for the show everywhere. I don't know. I guess.
I mean, there's an evil corporation for sure. I don't know if it's like blatantly like anti-corporate across the board.
Because, I mean, there's references to, like, Radio Shack, but they're not like, Radio Shack is evil. Don't trust the Radio Shack. Like, you know,
I think it's more like, look at these assholes, not general.
Yeah, it's more or less, it's the corporation, as you put it, Sam, it's like, they're corrupt, and the people that around them are corrupt because, like you said before, like off podcast, like it gives you a feeling of the Watchmen, you know, who's watching the Watchmen kind of thing. It's the same kind of feel where it's like, but who's policing the superheroes?
Except this, I've gotten the vibe where it does it a very worse, like, go at it in like the whole, like, you know, power kind of corrupts, where it's just like, Yeah, they became powerful, so they started having orgies.
Well, I mean, that's not the only thing they do. There's other things other than that that you haven't gotten into that shows how corrupt they actually are.
What, like the scenes where they're like arguing about money?
No, trust me.
It gets a lot worse.
like the airplane scene. People. The airplane.
Did you see
scene.
The airplane?
Yes, okay, I've seen the airplane.
I saw the airplane scene. It was like,
no, you haven't seen the airplane scene.
All right.
The one in international waters.
I have almost no interest in keep watching the show. It just, like, it just feels like I said, it feels like a power fantasy from, like, some, like, just feels like a power fantasy from people who feel slightly outcast.
Are you, like, mad, or you just don't like it?
I mean, it's not terrible. I'm like not insulted by this thing, but I'm just solidly like, why did this have to exist? And B, like,
well, I mean, it was an award-winning comic book, but you know,
I'm happy this is out there.
I'm very happy this is
comic
out there
book
too.
Readers well known for not having power fantasies.
Yes.
I'm so happy this is out there. It provides such a different viewpoint.
Does it?
It's completely out there. It fills the Preacher, the hole that Preacher left.
Well, like, here's the thing. So, like I said, you know, you get the Preacher vibe where it's like, it's very out there, and like they're based on the rest of the superhero genre that's out there, they're very going in the opposite direction.
But doesn't this feel like the most generic way you can go, like a twisted dark way?
No. Shall I point you to Watchmen?
No, they literally like are just like, okay, so they're corrupt and twisted, so they're gonna be only interested in money and fame and sex. Yep, that seems about right.
Yeah, but point me to another TV show or movie where the superheroes are corrupted.
Go
or
to
run
anything
by an organization
that just kind of like takes a dark take on something, and this is the simplest and easiest direction to go.
Okay.
I don't know. It's gonna change if you continue.
Yeah, I definitely feel like Sam's got that, like, he's gotten to the tip of the iceberg, and he's like, this iceberg is small. Like, you need to see the whole thing. Like, you've just seen a little bit.
You guys have said nothing that has surprised me about the show.
Well, I will say this, Sam. I did feel like a little bit different about the show after like two or three episodes than I did after one. After one, I was almost like, well, I said we'd watch two to discuss in the podcast, and I as well watch two. And it's not like the second one has like an incredible hook or anything. But I don't know. I do feel like you do learn a little bit more, and you kind of get your bearings in it. I will agree, there are times where it is like a heavy-handed like Watchmen. Or at least, like, hey, I've already seen this. It's called Watchmen. But, you know, I think it's okay. I'm not like, 100% on it.
No. I really like it. Like Chris said, it scratched an itch I didn't think I needed it to be scratched. But, like, going back to the Preacher thing, it's like, I feel like this is what Preacher could have been if it wasn't on AMC. Like, the fact that it was on television, they had to hold back on a lot. And, like, because we all had high hopes for that show. Like, first, like, couple episodes, we were like, ooh, this seems very interesting, like, very different. And then it just, like, went down into a rut and got boring. And then the second season came around and it showed promise again. And then went back into a rut. Whereas this, like, I feel like this, because there's no one really being like, no, you can't do that. I mean, there's a few things they're not allowed to do, but I mean, it's not as much as like AMC would be for like, you definitely can't do that kind of stuff. But yeah, the whole like, you know, sex, money, fame kind of thing, like that being a motivation. I mean, it's human nature. Because, I mean, like, what else would make somebody corrupt, Sam?
Just sort of believing in their own infallibility.
Eh.
But that's, like,
how does that make an interesting show?
I mean, that's what like Ozymandian does in Watchmen.
Right. But there's, I mean,
it's not interesting.
It's, yeah, it to have like,
I think it is far more interesting than this generic crap.
Right, but that's one honestly, character.
Like, every time any movie or show wants to establish someone as corrupt and evil, they go with these tropes.
Because they're usually the true tropes that drive human nature. I'm sorry that human nature works this way, but that's human nature.
But that's not really.
Did you see the orgy place?
Yeah, I did. And I was like, Sam, of course there's an orgy in this.
Did you see them shove the syntax up the guy's ass?
No, he did not.
Syntax?
Or C4 or plastique. Plastique.
I believe that's episode 2.
And then he hasn't got. Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't even gotten there. So, like.
Yeah, that's a good. You know what, Sam? Watch the second episode. If you don't like it, you don't. We won't have to talk about it again. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have to.
I want to tell him stuff.
I know.
Go ahead. You're not. No. Because
the thing is,
I keep watching.
I'm going to finish this show. I will finish this show.
Sam, it's always going to be the kind of show that you think it is now, but it's just a little bit better version of it. I wasn't thrilled by the first episode either.
Yeah, but like,
no, there's a few parts of the first episode that are just are immediate turnoffs, but then there's other parts that are the thing that pulls you in.
No.
So,
I think the more you the team comes together and the more you understand the team, the better this show becomes.
The build-up, the way that the team plays off each other improves over time, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I believe
so. It definitely improves by the end of the season.
Yeah.
Which, it's, you know, it sucks because it's only 8, but I understand that shows nowadays are never more than 13.
Which
but,
I'm okay with. I'd rather, I'm happy that it's only 8.
Yeah, I'm happy that it's 8. And the whole thing, I don't want to say the whole thing ends with, like, twists and turns and stuff, but there's some stuff that you just, like, what the hell, man? Why isn't there a second one to explain what just happened?
I mean, I don't know the numbers, but I know this show has gotten good reviews, to say the least. So, I mean,
they already renewed it for a second.
Did they renew it? Okay, I was going to say.
Before it even came out.
Oh, good. Because, yeah. I mean, I feel like if it's a nerd thing and Carl Urban is attached to it. If it's not named Doom, I think it's going to do pretty good.
It will succeed.
As long as it's not named Doom.
They renewed it for a second season, good. And the comic books themselves stopped at 72 books. Yeah. So there is an end.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's like a satisfying ending, I don't know, but there is an end to it. So
it does seem like
there's a limit.
So I was just like reading up on the comic, and it seems like this first season is like the first like 10 issues of the comic. It follows that that timeline kind of thing. So it seems nice that they're kind of following the source material rather than like, we know the source material, we're going to do our own spin on it.
Well, whatever they're doing now, it's working. Going. So whether or not they're following it or doing something different, it's definitely working. Particularly, for some reason, I never thought I would love this. This is not something that I usually would enjoy, but for some reason I really do.
I remember seeing the reviews and being like, we'll see. This is honestly the first Amazon Prime show that I've actually enjoyed. Like, really, really enjoyed. So
not even Grand Tour?
It's okay. It's not as good
I mean, it's as good as Top Gear, which is just like, I'll watch it if it's there.
Yeah. But the nice thing about Top Gear is like, but it's on BBC right now. Oh, I'll just switch it on. Whereas this, it's like, I'll watch Grand Tour. Let me turn on my device and scroll through and search. And, there it is. Okay, what episode did I leave off? Like, I don't need to do that for a show. Whereas Top Gear, I'll be like, I've seen this episode like 5 times. It was a good episode. I'll keep watching.
Top Gear is not on BBC anymore.
I know. Well.
Well,
technically
Top Gear.
It is, but
yeah.
Not the real Top Gear.
So, but So I'm gonna keep going. Chris, you're in for a second season. John, are you gonna give it a few more episodes?
Yeah, I'll probably finish it off. Yeah. I don't know if I'll watch the second season if I'm at where I'm at right now, but yeah. That's a crazy thing to even speculate about. So
right.
I'll finish it off. We'll talk about it either next week or maybe the week after. Give people some time.
All right. Well, any final thoughts?
I'm good.
No?
I got nothing.
Okay. John, any final thoughts?
Hobbs and Shaw this weekend, I think.
Yes, good reviews so far. Just going to mention that. Good reviews out for early reviews.
I feel like
for
that's
Hobbs
the kind
Shaw.
Of movie that's graded on a scale, though.
That's true.
I'll probably watch that this weekend.
All right. Well, if you like our episodes, you can find us on Podbean, Stitcher, and iTunes. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/KnightsOfNerditude. Leave us a comment. If you want us to talk about something, I mean, let us know. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Good night.